Dr. Metzler Brody and Dr. Christina Deli Gianitis will be speakers at a free community presentation on postpartum depression, new research and treatments, hosted by Connect Summit County in partnership with Psychiatric Research Society this Friday, March 15th, from noon to 1:30 at the Hotel Park City. Dr. Metzler Brody and Dr. Deli Gianitis are nationally recognized experts in the causes and novel treatments of perinatal postpartum depression. Dr. Metzler Brody's work is focused on understanding the genetic signature of postpartum depression and developing novel treatment and new trends and options in pharmacotherapies. Dr. Metzler Brody, welcome to The Mountain Life. Dr. Metzler Brody, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I am here.
Great. Good to have you. So you'll be speaking as part of the Connect free series that they bring to the community from time to time. And that happens this Friday at the Hotel Park City from noon to 1:30. And I just read the intro of your discussion topic. It's perinatal postpartum depression. And I always find it interesting that I get to tackle some of these topics by myself when the host of the show, Lynn Ware Peak, is on assignment. So here you're speaking to a man who is also a father. And so I went through this. My oldest is 31 years old and my youngest is 29 years old. And I have to tell you, I think I was fairly oblivious to what might have been actual postpartum depression experienced by their mother some 31 years ago and possibly 29 years ago. And I would assume that that's somewhat common.
Yes, unfortunately, it's very common. Postpartum depression is one of the most common medical complications of childbirth, but it is often missed. And until the last decade, it really was not something that was talked about very much. Screening rarely happened, but thankfully there's been a sea change and things are changing dramatically. So routine screening is now recommended by all major medical associations that interact with either pregnant moms, postpartum moms, and their babies.
And if you could just help our audience understand the different terms, I have a basic understanding, but when you're saying postpartum, that sounds like a time frame versus a actual situation, or maybe it's both. Maybe it's a health situation that occurs in a time frame. But could you walk us through some of those various definitions so that we just have a basic understanding?
Yes, absolutely. So the time around childbirth is one of the most vulnerable times for a woman and her family's life, as you expressed. It is a very dramatic and profound time. And for families, it can be filled with great joy. But if there is depression or anxiety that occurs during that time, it can be fraught with great difficulty. When we talk about postpartum, we mean any time after childbirth, but usually within the first few months of childbirth is the most common definition of postpartum itself. Some definitions will expand out to the entire first year postpartum, but really we're talking about people who have onset of symptoms after childbirth and onset really in the first few months postpartum. Now, that doesn't mean people are treated, and oftentimes people will not talk about it. Many moms are reluctant to talk about it, fear stigma. It's difficult for women to come forward and say, I'm actually having symptoms of depression and anxiety and feeling miserable at a time in their life when they're expected to be happy. So that can be a real barrier. And that's why routine screening is so important. So we now see routine screening happening at routine postpartum visits with OB and other obstetrical care providers. And many pediatric clinics are now doing routine screening because the pediatricians often, as you know, see moms and families much more often than the OB providers in the postpartum period.
And when did you've talked about these screenings being a recent development. Roughly when did that become more routine?
It's really been the last decade that there's been a big change with most medical organizations, and this is the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American College of OBGYN and Family Medicine and Psychiatry, all of these professional organizations saying, we really need to be doing this. This is the right thing to do. The U.S. Services Preventative Task Force has also recommended that routine screening happening both during pregnancy and postpartum. So for some women, onset of symptoms can happen during pregnancy, and that puts them at risk for postpartum depression. And just to highlight, postpartum depression can be devastating, both to the mom, the baby, and the family. So it can do many things. One, if the mom's suffering and having low mood, not enjoying the baby, not able to function, not able to sleep even when the baby's sleeping, not really able to interact, there could be horrible anxiety that can be debilitating, and it is often associated with having thoughts of wanting to hurt oneself. So mothers can have suicidal thoughts, and we know that suicide is one of the greatest causes of maternal mortality, which is obviously a horrible, horrible outcome. The other thing we're concerned about is that postpartum depression can impair the mom's ability to have appropriate bonding and attachment with the baby. And that can set the baby up for many more negative health outcomes over the course of the baby's life. So that's why it's so important that we have screening and treatment, and treatment we want to be early and as effective as possible to get mom functioning back on her feet and to prevent negative outcomes for baby. Again, as you mentioned, this obviously has a horrible effect on the family. So for dads and partners, it's awful to have mom struggling in this way. It then can quickly become a family crisis, because if mom's not able to function, the whole thing becomes really, really difficult for everyone.
Yeah. In that familial system, I think there are probably many potential ways that this could play out. And what I hear you talking about also is the destigmatization of depression in general, and how over the last 10 years, this process from a number of different agencies within the health realm have taken a new approach to mental health. And we talk about mental wellness, and we talk about it being on a continuum. And, you know, some people are at the polar ends of the continuum, but most of us fall somewhere in between. And we're not recognizing people with mental illness as much as we are where we exist on that continuum, and being able to tie postpartum depression into this broader movement of mental awareness is something that is happening right here in this community, and is one of the reasons you're coming to speak as one of the speakers in the Connect series.
Terrific.
Can you sort of make those associations? Am I correct in making that association? I guess would be the proper question.
Absolutely. I think, you know, well-being is really important, and I think many people are struggling now with stress. We're very much a stress society, and I guess it's hard to imagine that you're stressed in Park City, someplace so beautiful, but I guess that doesn't necessarily protect people from, I'm joking, of course, but from feeling stressed or struggling with depression or anxiety.
It's a great point, because it ties into one of the points you made earlier about expectations and reality. And expectations
Absolutely.
Are that if you live in a place like Park City, or if you're having a baby, you should be over the moon thrilled.
Exactly. And we know that depression in general is extraordinarily common. If we talk about postpartum depression, this affects 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 women that give birth, and it can be higher rates of prevalence in women at higher risk. So it's very, very common. This is 10 to 15% of all women that give birth.
Can I ask you a question about that? Would there be, what sort of correlation would there be to women in general and depression versus women who are, giving birth and depression? I'm just wondering if there's less of a correlation with women giving birth and depression because they are experiencing certain hormones that kick in and create more dopamine or oxytocin or whatever goes into the system during the birth cycle. Is there anything like that that's happening?
That's a really good question. So we know that the rates of lifetime depression for women across their entire life, from childhood to death, that one in five women may have some sort of depressive illness over the course of their lifetime at some time, so very common at any time. But a good part of that, we think, is largely driven by the perinatal period. So the prevalence in the postpartum period can be 10 to 15% of all women that give birth. It really becomes such an important time for detection and intervention for the reasons I've mentioned. One, it's such a vulnerable time for families, but you're also talking about mom and baby and really potential adverse impact on the child if it's not diagnosed and treated. The great thing is we do have a number of different ways of treating, and for that reason, it's really important for people to get screened because we can do a lot to help moms and their families feel better. And that's, you know, such an important point to be able to communicate.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Metzler Brody. She'll be presenting as part of the Connect Summit County partnership with the Psychiatric Research Society and part of the speaker series this Friday, March 15th from noon to 1:30 at Hotel Park City. It's a free event and open to anybody in the public who would like to learn more about postpartum and perinatal depression. Dr. Metzler Brody, what about the screening? What is it that we're looking for that pediatricians are trying to pick up through this screening?
So most women are advised to be screened during pregnancy and in the early postpartum period. There are a couple different very common patient self-report screening instruments that are commonly used. One is called the Edinburgh Postnatal Depression Scale. It was originally developed in the 1980s in the UK, but it's used internationally and is one of the most common instruments used in this country, often abbreviated as the EPDS. Anyone can quickly Google the EPDS and print it out and ask, you know, look at the questions, answer them. That's commonly given in either OB offices, family medicine offices, pediatric offices, and there's very clear cutoffs for how we think about whether someone is at risk or not and should be seen by a clinician or have further treatment. So this is often given in pediatric offices, you know, in obstetrical settings. It can be used during pregnancy. It can be used postpartum.
And I'm thinking there must be things that people in the family system can do to take the first step toward the screening. Obviously, not everybody's getting screened. There are those that are higher risk or those that are showing symptoms. I would imagine a husband or a relative who's involved. Oftentimes, mothers come during birth and are there for a week or two or a month or two to help through that initial period. So I'm wondering if oftentimes mothers are directed to the in-office screening from sort of the family system.
Yes, and so you've raised a really important point, and it's so critical that families support women who are suffering from these symptoms. So certain things families can be on the lookout for. And as you mentioned, oftentimes the grandmother is the most wise person to say, you know, this doesn't look right. For first-time moms and their husbands or partners, they may not even know what you're supposed to look like postpartum. Many people haven't spent a lot of time with a newborn and don't even know what it's supposed to look like. But grandmothers are often very wise in that way. So things families can be on the lookout for. If the woman is unable to sleep even when the baby is sleeping, if there's a marked change in appetite, not wanting to eat, if she's looking much more socially withdrawn, tearful, anxious, and not in a way that's a few days or what we call the baby blues, which is seen as very common, but something that's persistent, lasting, you know, more than a week or two, certainly not being able to function in her usual way. If there's uncontrolled anxiety, any thoughts that life is not worth living, all of those would be red flags for saying, you know what, I think you may be having one of the most common complications of childbirth, and I think we just need to get you screened and treated. I think family members can do a whole lot by decreasing stigma, making sure mom realizes that this is a medical complication like anything else, and again, one of the most common complications, and helping her to seek treatment as quickly as possible so she can get better.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that treatment. Let's look at it from the medical perspective, and then there's also a family perspective. You talked about being supportive, but there must be a way that would act, that support might even translate into a form of treatment. But let's look at the medical side of treatment first.
So the medical side of treatment, in general, has included either psychotherapy or medication. So those have been the two evidence-based therapies to date. And oftentimes, for people that would have more mild symptoms, psychotherapy is recommended as the first-line treatment. And there's a variety of different types of psychotherapy. In terms of medication treatment, historically, standard antidepressants have been used. None of them were specifically developed for postpartum depression, but the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors or fluoxetine, Prozac, and that class of drugs are commonly used. Other drugs commonly used can include anti-anxiety medications, help with sleep. But that would be sort of often first-line treatments for women that have moderate or more severe symptoms that require medication treatment.
Gosh, I would think that medication would be a real issue of concern with new moms and breastfeeding and the transmission of medication to a newborn. I'm sure that's something that is thoroughly examined and discussed, sort of the pros and cons of that.
Absolutely. So that is always something that is discussed when any medication is given to a woman during pregnancy or lactation is what is the, you know, risk to the fetus or baby. And the SSRIs have been widely studied in that regard. In the postpartum period, it really differs by the type of SSRI, with some having more transmission into breast milk and some having very little. So, for example, sertraline has very little transmission into breast milk and is often more commonly used in postpartum women if that's appropriate. But, you know, as a perinatal psychiatrist, what's most important to me is that we are able to help moms feel better. I think the data is overwhelming that this is not something you can ignore. And in the same way you would treat mom if she had diabetes or hypertension, depression absolutely needs to be treated. And if medications are the most appropriate way to go, then they need to be used. And mom's mental health becomes critical for the health of the baby and family.
Well, and that goes right to the second question, which I know we've addressed already to some degree, but maybe a little deeper dive here, which is how family support can actually translate into a form of treatment. And I would think, I mean, the obvious is that if we can move away from guilt and shame and embrace, acknowledge, recognize, and accept, then we're taking a big step in changing something that we would traditionally just call being supportive to actually helping treat a situation.
Absolutely, and that's why routine screening, in the same way we screen for gestational diabetes or we screen for any number of routine things in moms and new babies, given how common this is, it has to be routinely screened, and then there needs to be treatment offered. You know, the concern is that it's very spotty, so someone may go to a doctor in one obstetrical practice where they screen everyone and then go to, you can have someone 10 minutes down the road that doesn't screen at all. And even though there's national guidelines and recommendations, it still may be spotty in terms of what a woman actually gets. So that's why I think families being educated, women being educated, and that if they're not routinely screened, they need to ask to be. And the hope is that increased awareness will allow and push all providers to see this as something that must be done. The other thing worth mentioning is that there's a lot of interesting research. I've had the opportunity to participate in clinical trials research, and I'm at the University of North Carolina, and there's new medication treatments that are on the horizon. So there is lots of excitement in the field, including a new medication that's been specifically developed for postpartum depression.
Well, I wanted to ask you about what gave you hope, having been in this field for a number of years and doing your research and your clinical studies. So I guess kind of as a conclusion to this, and we'll wrap up with we'll review what you're doing again in part of the speaker series right at the end, but what does give you hope from looking at kind of the progression of this field of study and interaction, treatment, diagnosis over the last 30 or 40 years? And what do you see? You just alluded to new medications that are coming on, but kind of the high level framework or picture for what we can take away as a hopeful message.
Absolutely. So I will tell you that 20 years ago when I entered this field, there were very few people working in it, and there was great reluctance to acknowledge how prevalent it was to even consider routine screening. The American College of OBGYN, it was not something they were encouraging at all. And now you have it embraced by ACOG, American College of OBGYN. They've made multiple statements. You have the U.S. Preventative Task Force saying this is the case. And we have a growing awareness how critical it is, and there are multiple new treatments, both psychotherapy options and medication options. So the fact that there's, you know, been the development of a new medication specifically for postpartum depression is certainly, you know, shows that there is great interest and recognition of what a vital area this is and the opportunity for intervention that can have huge public health consequences in a positive way, but across two generations. So if you're treating mom, you are then treating mom and baby. And that's why screening and using evidence-based therapies that will be most appropriate for the mom are really, really critical and vital.
Can we just, I know I'm going to ask one more question after I said that was, I do that all the time. And if Lynn were here, she'd be scolding me for it, but Bob's very kind. He doesn't do that. But that raises the question of, sorry. What do you attribute that to? You know, it could be just recognition.
Well, you could attribute it to probably three things. One is that the overwhelming amount of research and data has simply made it impossible to ignore. The second piece would be, I think, women have become much more a part of science and medicine and have been really pushing that this be something that's highly recognized. And so if you go to any perinatal psychiatry or psychology conference, it is often about 85 to 90% women that are interested in the field. So like most things in women's health, it is often women who are beating the pavement and now working in these fields and seeing it as something that needs increased awareness. However, there are wonderful men who are leading the way. And so in 2009, it was the ACOG president, Dr. Jerry Joseph, that made it the ACOG presidential platform. They made postpartum depression the presidential platform and really helped change the tide for how ACOG thought about this. And then I think that the governmental and public health agencies are realizing that there is such negative impact on moms, on babies, on families, lost work days, the economic impact of that, that it's just vital that we intervene at a time when there's such great opportunity to really make meaningful changes that will change the outcome for that family and the baby. So for all of those reasons, I think we have moved in an exciting new direction, and that's also being fueled by science, thinking about new ways to deliver treatment. So psychotherapy that can be delivered by telepsychiatry, smartphone apps. We now have the ability to reach people in so many different ways. That's really exciting, as well as, you know, a new medication specifically developed for postpartum depression called brexanolone. That's very exciting. So I think all of these things are forward progress and give me great hope that we're moving in the right direction.
Well, that's a wonderful message, and I'm so glad you're going to be coming to Park City and presenting this information and giving your talk. Dr. Metzler-Brody will be speaking as part of the community presentation on postpartum depression new research and treatments hosted by Connect Summit County in partnership with the Psychiatric Research Society this Friday, March 15th, from noon to 1:30 at the Hotel Park City. Dr. Metzler-Brody, thanks for joining us on The Mountain Life today, and look forward to your presentation.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to the community presentation on Friday.
Great. Thanks.